Feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyberweb? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives: news, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hello everyone, my name is Anna and you're listening to Season 6's All Access Pass, the summer edition on CITR 101.9 FM. I hope everyone is doing well and enjoying the sunny, hot summer. On Zoom, I am joined by my Accessibility Collective teammates, and since it's been a while, we'll just introduce ourselves real quick.
Hi everyone, my name is Gura Gill and I'm a UBC alumni in Physiology and Immunology. I'm originally from BC, and lo and behold, I just stuck around and studied here as well. This is my second year as a member of the Accessibility Collective, and it has been wonderful. I am most looking forward to all the new people that we will meet and share a vision with.
Hello there, everyone, again. So my name is still Anna, and I'm a fourth-year social work student here at UBC. This will be my last year at the social work program, and I'm hoping to get into a master's program next year. I have traveled and lived all over Canada, and I'm happy to be back in Vancouver. And I'm super looking forward to meeting everybody in the collective this fall.
Sure, here's the song, Nocturne number 20, originally by Chopin, covered by the artist Adrian Ananatuan. Adrian is a violinist from Ontario who's performed at the White House and the United Nations. He was born with one hand and uses a prosthetic to hold his bow. To encourage inclusion for people with disabilities in the music world, he has also founded the Music Inclusion Program in Boston, where half the children have moderate to severe disabilities.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was Nocturne number 20, originally by Chopin, covered by the artist Adrian Ananatuan.
Thanks, Gura. Now we're pleased to start our show. Today we are joined by some really super cool people, the team of Crypt Times podcast series. This is what they have to say about themselves. Disabled people have long been experts at staying at home and getting creative with new ways to stay in community with one another. At the beginning of the COVID-19 lockdown, many of us were wondering how we could maintain the sense of intimacy and connection that we get from gathering in Crypt art spaces. Out of the desire, Crypt Times was born, a new interview podcast series introduced and hosted by Yusuf Kadura, Kayla Bessie, and Christina McMullen. Crypt Times is a project of Bodies in Transition and Tangle Art Plus Disability and hosted on Andrew Gerza's Wheels on the Ground podcast network. So now we'll ask our guests some questions.
Excellent. Well, I'll go for the first question for everyone. So just to no one in particular, anybody that wishes to answer, can you tell us a bit about yourselves?
Sure. So I can start with this one. I am Christina McMullen. Pronouns are she, her, and I am a Canadian with immigrant lineage. And I've actually spent some time living in Vancouver, but I've been living in Toronto for the last 10 years, working in arts administration and a little bit of academia. And so I come into the Crypt Times podcast through my work at Tangled Art Plus Disability, which I did for about 4.5 years. And in that role, really working on what it means to produce accessible promotions for disability arts events in a gallery space. I left that role very sadly, but very excitedly in February of 2021 to pursue some academic interests. So I'm currently a master's student at X University in a communications and culture program. And my research really looks into the ways in which disabled people produce and perform creative labor and how these principles and tenets of disability justice that are defined, licensed, and valid can inform the ways that disabled and non-disabled folks produce and perform creative labor, namely within a workplace like an art gallery. Outside of that kind of academic pursuit, I'm also a research assistant on a team called Crypting Masculinity, and it's based out of Toronto, as well as Treaty 6 territory out in Alberta, that investigates how disabled cis and trans men, as well as non-binary mass prevention folks, use clothing as a way of enacting their identities. So really looking into just the ways in which Crip excellence, disabled excellence is performed on an everyday basis. Outside of my work, I am inherently a community worker. Like a lot of my disabled peers, I didn't really grow up alongside other disabled folks. So I always thought I was this very independent, introverted person. But when I started working in disability communities, everything kind of fell into place. And so I defined myself not only by my work, but also by this belief that my role in this universe in a kind of macro way is to exist in service to my community. So not only my work, but also just like my friendships and really honoring the interdependent disabled magic that we all produce on a day-to-day level. And really excited to do it with two of my friends, Kayla and Yusuf.
Excellent. So much to talk about there. And thank you so much for sharing. We really appreciate that. I'll move that on to Kayla next, if Kayla would be willing to speak.
Absolutely. Thank you. My name is Kayla Bessie. My pronouns are she, her. I'm coming to you today from Guelph, Ontario, about an hour outside Toronto. And I'll do a bit of a visual description because we are on the radio. So I am a white settler, disabled, visibly disabled woman. I have long dark hair. I'm wearing a white shirt with thin black stripes. I'm in my home office. Behind me, you can see a color-blocked bookcase and a pennant that says joy is an act of resistance, which I think we might talk a little bit more about joy later in this episode, so that feels really pertinent to Crypt Times. I currently am Tangled Arts Public Education Coordinator, which is one half of their communications team, and really just a fancy way of saying I help to, you know, translate the work and the art that we do on social media and in other academic and non-academic spaces to make the work of disability arts and culture legible to our communities and to as many folks as possible in creative and, you know, critical mediums. My educational background, I did my bachelor's and my master's at the University of Guelph in the School of English and Theatre Studies, but really I was sneakily doing disability studies. That's how I came to the disability arts world. So my thesis work was looking at primarily disability memoir and self-representation in literature and in film as a counter to ableist modes of representation that inform popular and medical bias. So I'm really interested in storytelling and, you know, the power that stories and art have to shape our worlds and help us live them on our own terms. Yeah, I'll let Yusuf take it from here.
Thanks, Kayla. Hi, everyone. My name is Yusuf Kudura. I am a Lebanese-Canadian actor, writer, sometimes teacher, sometimes producer, most times whatever I kind of need to be for the project. I'm a right leg amputee, and I've been to Toronto for the past 4 years at this point. I am also a founding company member of Other Hearts, which is a new performance collective. And I have worked on and off with Tangled Art Plus Disability and these wonderful folks since I came to Toronto in 2017, and I'm very happy to be here.
Wonderful, everybody. We're super excited to have you, and you sound like super awesome people, as I already said. So can you tell us how you all met each other and started all of this?
Yeah, so this is Christina speaking, and Yusuf and I did meet when he first moved to Toronto at Tangled Art Gallery, so that was 4 years ago, and thankfully within the disability arts community and within Tangled, we've been able to work together for 4 years, and our friendship and work relationship has been working out quite well for the last 4 years, and so always excited to work together. And then I knew of Kayla for maybe like a year and a half, 2 years before we actually met. I knew her through her work at Bodies in Translation. And then we became friends, and maybe I'll let Kayla talk about how we met from her perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Kayla speaking. Christina and I were part of a cohort of access activators with the British Council Canada. So it's a group of people from across the country who were working on something called Relaxed Performance, which originated in the UK in primarily autistic communities. And we've worked over the past like 3 years now to broaden that work and expand it, bring it to other art spaces like Crip fashion shows, like choral performances. And so, yeah, it's very funny. Christina and I spent like a concentrated week in February 2020 at the Art Gallery of Ontario, where we were bringing that cohort of people together. So the perfect time to make a new friend is like a month before a pandemic lockdown, for sure. So we like FaceTime a lot, and we've perfected our long distance relationship. Looking forward to making that an IRL friendship very soon. And then, yeah, Yusuf, just, you know, we can tell you a bit in a minute about sort of how the podcast came to be. But yeah, it's like work becomes friendship. For sure.
Totally. Super cool, guys. It's nice to see, you know, the relationship you guys have together. And that's what makes a podcast, right? The banter and the relationship between the individual participants. But with that being said, let us totally move on to the podcast. And I have a question about that. So Crip Times podcast series is a project of Bodies in Translation and Tangled Arts Plus Disability. Can you tell us what these projects are about and how they're connected?
Absolutely. So for anyone who doesn't know, Tangled Art Plus Disability is a nonprofit disability arts organization dedicated to access-centered approaches to the curation and promotion of disability, deaf, and mad arts. The organization has run Tangled Art Gallery downtown Toronto for 5 years now, and is currently, but you know, hopefully this will change, is the only nonprofit in Canada with a fully disability-identified staff. Which is pretty awesome. And yeah, as we may have mentioned before, the disability arts community in Ontario is quite fulsome, but much like any community, it feels small, and we all, you know, have overlapping working and personal relationships, so that feels really cool. But Bodies in Translation, full name Activist Art Technology and Access to Life, or BIT for short, is a SHRC, so the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada, SHRC-funded partnership grant based out of the Revision Centre for Art and Social Justice at the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada. So in the early days of Crip Times, I was working as BIT's Knowledge Mobilization Coordinator. So I supported various research projects and their communications to the public via social media and other avenues. And just for full context, BIT is a research project that creates these collaborative partnerships between artists, arts organizations, activists, scholars, and educators. So they cultivate activist art produced by disabled, deaf, fat, mad, and elder people, with the goal of expanding understandings of vitality and advancing social justice. I know that is a mouthful, but in short, Tangled is a partner with BIT. So we've co-produced many events and exhibitions, and in the last year and a half, digital content. So there was a lot of overlap between the two organizations, a lot of common goals, and yeah, it just makes a lot of sense when those worlds collide.
And this is Yusuf speaking, picking up on that. At Tangled Art Plus Disability, when the pandemic started to kind of snowball into a thing that we were all realizing was going to have a big impact on our lives, I was doing some contract work at the time with Tangled, and Christina was also working there. And previous years and years ago, when I was in theater school, I had done a very short podcast series on disability in Canadian theater. And so I brought a very small pitch to Tangled going, why don't we do a very short podcast series or something to fill in the empty space that we're losing from artist talks, because those couldn't happen anymore, and create a space for our community to have some fun conversations. And Christina absolutely loved the idea and helped to really pull the thing together. And then we heard through the grapevine that Kayla and the folks at BIT were also considering what working in the podcast medium could look like. And that's where we three kind of collided, and our skills fit each other in a way where we felt like this was a very, very feasible thing for us to do. And then we brought on Andrew Gerza to assist us with the Wheels on the Ground network. And that is the beginning of how we've gotten to where we are now.
Well, I think it's just like a testament to the like kind of power and magic of disability and Crip friendships. Cause Kayla and Yusuf had actually never met each other in the real world before the pandemic hit, but again, kind of like knew that the other one existed. And so when I was able to share with the other, which the other idea was, there was this shared excitement. And I think it was like that very first meeting that the three of us had on like a Friday afternoon in like June or July of 2020. And it felt so right. And we just had been able to capitalize on that just immediate feeling of comfort with one another, and this immediate understanding that our work, not only like morals and values, but also just like our work processes really do meld and complement each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Christina. And I'll just say one last thing about why podcasting. And from a bit more of an academic perspective, a lot of the folks at BIT and at the Revision Center were interested in podcasting as being part of, you know, air quotes, legitimate scholarship. And so Dr. Carla Rice had been involved with a peer review process for the Secret Feminist Agenda podcast, which is really awesome. So we were excited to, you know, value this labor, this creative labor, as something valuable and have a platform for disabled artists to, you know, be honored as like legitimate experts in their own experience and needs, and valuing podcasting on a scale equal with other types of scholarly and artistic output, in a time when, as Yusuf was alluding to, you know, we couldn't have artist talks, we couldn't gather together. So how do we still be together in ways that value people's time and labor, etc.?
It's like you have a very considerate and thoughtful project here. I love how much thought and effort went into this, and thank you for sharing this with our listeners. So now let's get into a bit more of the meat of the situation, and if people can tell us what you talk about in your podcast, The Crip Times.
Yeah, so the three kind of streams that are consistent throughout every episode that we recorded was art, academia, and activism. So folks who were disability or not identified, we wanted to obviously work with folks that were in a similar stream to what the three of us had been working in, but in kind of different industry. So we really got together and kind of thought about the creative artists and creative academics and creative activists in our network and beyond that we really wanted to have conversations with that did align with the mission and mandate of Tangled Art with Disability and Bodies in Translation, but had practices and ways of producing and ways of being in the world that would expand the conversations that we were already having. And there was also a big opportunity to feature art forms that maybe don't necessarily exist within an art gallery. So writers or fashion professors or just activists who are producing on the streets. But really the through line is let art, activism, academia, and then somewhat selfishly, people that we wanted to have conversations with. At the end of the day, we wanted to enjoy the work that we were producing. We wanted to enjoy the conversations that we were having. And we knew that, like Kayla kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, we knew that if we focused on the joy in production and the joy in conversations, that that would make its way into our communities, whether they were listening to the podcast or reading the transcripts.
This is Yusuf speaking, and to expand on that, with each episode, we really put a lot of emphasis on our guest as also being a producer, and that they get to really choose the direction of the conversation and what they wanted to tackle with each episode. So each episode kind of in its own way, because each of these art makers, activists, awesome people who we spoke with had such wildly different practices. Each episode has a very different feeling and energy compared to the previous one in always a different and equally exciting way, I like to think.
Excellent. Well, you know, we totally are looking forward to listening more of you guys and to see further in subsequent episodes. Here in BC, we don't actually use the terminology Crip because some individuals with disabilities find it too provocative or controversial. What do you guys have to say about this?
Yeah, I think before we start to even answer this question, it would be good if we kind of like speak to the history of the word Crip. So for folks who might not be super familiar, it is a reclamation of the negative epithet cripple. which definitely makes it understandable that folks find the term provocative or controversial, because crippled is quite negative in its origin. But reclamation is a really powerful act, and language in itself is a really powerful tool of those cultural shifts that we see. And oftentimes, shifts in power and shifts in culture are seen as provocative and are seen as controversial and are seen as somewhat uncomfortable. But there's a lot that can happen when we welcome discomfort and we sit with it. So CRIP, as a term that is rooted in its own political identity, came to cultural prominence kind of in academic spaces in the mid to late 2000s. So there were a lot of community spaces and communities that were utilizing this reclamation on their own, but it was an academic by the name of Robert McGruer, who was a disability scholar, who published the book Crip Theory in 2006. And so he kind of saw what was happening in these disparate communities in this act of reclamation, and really put it in text and put it in one space into a collective understanding. In this book, McGruer kind of traces the evolution of the term queer and really sees a lineage of the word crip as something similar in a lot of ways. So crip isn't necessarily a description of a body or a mind that falls into one specific disabled, deaf, mad, chronically ill category, but rather a political identity that is existing in opposition to the negatives in our society, like ableism, sanism, autism, and all these other isms that really oppress folks that are existing in a really ableist society. So it's not really something that we are ascribed, but it's something that we come into, and it is something that we come into with pride.
Yeah, I'll keep that line of thought going. Thank you, Christina. And so CRIP is never something that, as Christina was saying, that we would use for any individual if we didn't know their personal relationship to that term, right? And the definition that we use the most, I think, really encapsulates CRIP, comes from Kelly Fritch. And she defines CRIP as opening up with desire for the way that disability disrupts. So it's this desire for the disruption that sets CRIP movements apart from other movements in the disability space. And then it's so interesting to see how mainstream it has gone, even in the last year, right? Like when we have a documentary called Crip Camp on a platform as big as Netflix being nominated for an Emmy, they were robbed, in my opinion. But, you know, that term is entering the public consciousness even since we started the show in a way that I think it wasn't when this was just an idea of ours. I just want to make sure I'm giving credit where credit's due. So it was Allison Kafer who was the first person to coin the term Crip Time in a formal way in her book Feminist Queer Crip, which our podcast name is referential to. And Kafer defines Crip Time as a way of understanding time not from an abled linear approach, but one that has this assumption of disruption. And I just like to reiterate that CRIP is insider language, right? So this means that if you're a non-disabled person, you wouldn't refer to someone as CRIP unless you have their explicit permission, even if you yourself are disabled, because as you allude to, it's not a word that's used everywhere. It's a word that still has negative connotation in many places and spaces. So it's not a term for you to bestow on someone, but it's a political and social identity that someone might choose to claim for themselves as a point of pride. Sorry. So we see CRIP as both a noun and a verb. So something or someone can be CRIP as a identity marker, as a disabled person. Or we can crip something, like an event or an experience, even a podcast. So when we crip our practice or our space that we share together, we disrupt dominant norms of practice and understanding, and we prioritize one another's access needs, one another's limits, to make safer spaces to the best of our ability for disabled body minds, wherever we can.
Thank you for explaining this. Crip Camp was indeed very good on Netflix, and I do recommend it too. So let's move on to our next question, which is about Andrew Gerza. He's well known in the disability community. And how did you all meet him?
Well, I first met Andrew in 2018, 2019, somewhere around there. I was acting and doing a little more producing work in Toronto at the time. And I met him when I was co-producing on a play that he was working with at Cahoots Theatre, called Access Me, which was really cool because it was a cast of all queer disabled men and sort of a collective creation kind of piece. But we met there and began discussing podcasting a little bit, and I'd already known about, as well as I believe Christina and Kayla had known for a while, about his podcast series Disability After Dark. So that was how I first met him. And then it was through the creation of like us coming together and creating this podcast that we again heard through the grapevine that Andrew was looking to create a podcast network series and sort of share this community that he had so excellently built up over the past few years podcasting. And that's kind of how that relationship got started. But it's that wonderful thing in the Crip community of you meet people through whatever endeavor you're doing. And later down the line, there are ways in which those relationships open up in ways that you didn't necessarily expect.
Thank you so much, Yusuf, Christina, and Kayla. We will chat more with them in just a moment, so please stay with us. But now let's go to Gura for our second song break.
Thank you, Anna. Our second song of the show is When I Get Better by the artist Sarah Jickling off the album When I Get Better. Sarah Jickling is a Canadian singer-songwriter who openly discusses her struggles with anxiety and bipolar disorder. She is an avid mental health awareness advocate who makes music because of and in spite of her disabilities.
When I get better, you'll be mine. And we'll go dancing all the time. And I'll be beautiful and thin. My dress will show a little skin. And I will never think of dying. I'll call you up at midnight crying. Though I will only
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was When I Get Better by the artist Sarah Jickling off the album When I Get Better.
Thanks, Gura. Great song selection by Accessibility Collective member Katie. Thanks, Katie. So to reintroduce our guests, we have Yusuf, we have Christina, and we have Kayla with us today. They are from their team from the podcast Crypt Times. So now we'll go and ask them further questions because we have so many because you guys are so cool. Gura, would you like to ask the first question?
Absolutely. How important has highlighting accessibility experience and awareness been to your group?
That is an excellent question. Thank you. And it's honestly probably the most important thing. We're three people who like, excuse me for sharing, or swearing, excuse me. We're three people who like who give a shit about our work and we care a lot about our community and our work is for our community and our community desires and deserves work that is accessible to them and made with them in mind from the get-go and not as an additional thing to be added on. So there are a few like access tenants within our podcast. So first off, all of our shows had transcripts that were published at the exact same time as the audio version. We also released plain language overviews on our social media channels and on our kind of like podcast homepage on the Body Through Translation website. We had links to things that were mentioned in the article if folks wanted to look for more information on their own time. And we had key quotes. A lot of people don't want to go back into their iTunes or whatever and like go back. They want to just know what the key quote was. And so these access features were defined as necessary to the three of us before we even hit record on our first interview. We're aware that there's never going to be this utopic idea of a quote unquote fully accessible world or a quote unquote fully accessible podcast, as our needs and desires are as different as we all are. But we have these core principles and these unwavering priorities, and our work and our podcast reflects that.
This is Yusuf, and building on that, part of access for us is making sure that the people who are asking to come on the show and share their time and their knowledge and expertise with us are getting compensated for that. We aren't doing journalism with this podcast where we're using them as sources and things like that. We're having a discussion. And we're having them be producers with us. So making sure that people got paid for their time was also very important because especially when you're asking for the time of an artist or an academic, that is their value, that is their practice. So it was also very important for us to make sure that people get paid, everyone out there in the world. Please pay your artists. They need it.
Yeah. Money is access under capitalism, right? Like there's no other way to slice it. That's accessibility rule number one is, you know, let people decide how they spend their own time and resources and don't pretend that you know better than them. So let's just pay them for their time. And I'll give one example of when we were really like delighted and affirmed in our choices to prioritize access, even though it takes more time and more money. So being a new show, we didn't really have, you know, a sense exactly of our audience demographics when we started. We weren't sure how many deaf folks would read our transcripts, but we knew that the transcripts would be there when the episodes went live, right? That's equal access, not saying, oh, transcripts on request or transcripts coming a week or two later. They were there at the same time that the audio dropped. So on one of our early releases, Christina and I were monitoring our socials and we saw a deaf individual comment, like I think just a day or two after the release, with beautiful commentary and reflections on the episode with direct quotes that they related to. And, you know, obviously we don't produce this work for the Instagram comments, but that was just one of those moments that prove this pathway is the one that we want to be on, that the people we're wanting to reach are responding positively to it, and that the extra work is always, always worth it. And I think it's really powerful that we lead by example, because the more that, you know, podcasts are prioritizing access and showing that it's non-negotiable, I think it does put pressure on other folks, especially who have, you know, more access to resources than just the three of us do, you know, like large networks, to say, like, you should be doing this too. And that, yeah, the audience is there for it. If you think they're not, it's just because they haven't been able to access your work before.
Excellent points there. And what particularly interests you in the podcast medium? Obviously, you're doing a lot of consideration, and it's, again, as I said before, very thoughtful and thought through, and, you know, trying to be accessible. So what particularly interests you in the podcast medium, and have you had an idea of branching into other media, forms of media?
This is Christina speaking, and I can maybe kind of open up this question, because all of my interest from this podcast really started with conversations that I had with both Youssef and Kayla. So they were kind of independently thinking about how to reach out to community, and podcasting was an option, that it was kind of the way that each of them were speaking with such passion and clarity on its potential. It was kind of something I didn't want to say no to. And they both had a little bit more podcast experience than I do. And I think it's kind of something that I knew I wanted to continue really having powerful conversations with Crip community. But in terms of the media, it really was just what my cool friends and collaborators were talking about. And in terms of other forms of media, again, if Kayla and Youssef just want to give me an idea, like, we'll make it happen. I'll follow their lead and do as much as I can to support.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, that's very generous. I had not hosted a podcast before Crip Times. Youssef had, though. But like I said, when I was working with Bodies in Translation and I was doing knowledge mobilization work, and especially when I was thinking about knowledge translation through a disability justice lens, and we're in the pandemic and we can't do live Q&As and we can't do live art events, for me, like, traditional academic outputs are not it in terms of reaching people, especially when you're working with marginalized communities who might not have access to paid journals, to the jargon that they use, to, you know, the time to sit down with complicated materials. Podcasts felt ideologically accessible as well. You can put them on while you, you know, do other care work tasks, while you commute. It you know, feels like something that is not as exclusionary as a lot of academic outputs are. So it really appealed to me for those reasons. And also, it pretty much goes without saying, but in the pandemic, as something that we could still produce as a high quality product remotely. We could do it all from our homes in a COVID safe way. And it was something that we could pivot to during the pandemic. So yeah, Youssef, anything else to add?
Not too much, except to say, yeah, the pandemic was a really big part in us choosing to do it as a podcast style. I mean, for me, I've always enjoyed podcasting because it relates to voice acting for me. It relates to performance in those ways, and it relates to technical skills that I, as an actor and an artist, want to know and understand. But at the same time, it's a really fun form. There's a lot of pleasure to be had in it, and just interacting with people again was so helpful over the course of and continuing course of this pandemic. And having done a podcast previously for fun, I knew kind of going into it that there's a lot of potential for that pleasure to be had, and for us to create a product that, as Kayla said, is digestible in different places, right? You can listen to a podcast anywhere. I love going to the theater, but, like, you know, you have to go to the theater. I love watching movies, but like, I can't really do the other things that are going on in a super busy life while watching, while we could have like times the mini series, whatever. The podcast format just felt right for us.
Excellent, guys. And you know, it's just as you said, podcasts are much more convenient in so many ways, and when we're speaking about accessibility, convenience is definitely something that we need to highlight. We sort of addressed this point a couple times, but I thought I'd ask you guys directly, did the podcast prove to be a meaningful way for all of you to remain connected throughout the pandemic? Was the intimacy level more or less compared to pre-COVID times?
I mean, I think the short answer is yes, a million percent. For me personally, producing this podcast is really like a lifeline or surviving the pandemic. And I really did have like an emotional time when we released our last episode. Working with Kayla and Yusuf was obviously like a dream, but our featured guests and co-producer were so generous in the production of their episodes. And they led us to be able to have a lot of intimacy within those conversations, and being a part of them in the moment and then also listening back to them really did feel like a breath of fresh air. I think in a more like pessimistic way, my tendency would be that it's really difficult to compare to pre-COVID time because there is so much power held in a room where disabled folks can safely gather, and that gathering is a place in rich in desire and rich in joy. Even before the pandemic, because of the ableism that is built into our physical and social environment, our world is so inaccessible. So just having disabled people able to gather in physical space, like that happened at Tangled Art Gallery, as well as Bodies in Translation, always felt revolutionary. But definitely being behind a screen and being in this podcast production, personally, it's really challenged me to be intentional about building intimacy. And that intentionality certainly is a form of labor that doesn't necessarily exist in physical, real, quote unquote, spaces. But that intentionality leads to a lot of beauty and a lot of joy in the ways that the casual intimacy of shared physical space pre-COVID maybe wasn't.
Yeah, definitely, Christina. I think another part of what you're saying there about like online intimacy brings up for me the fact that sometimes in some circles, whether it be activism or art, there's some maybe inadvertent ableism that can arise when people prioritize, oh, you have to be in person in order for it to be a real protest, or you have to be in person for it to be like a genuine connection. So I think the podcast space over Zoom like this helped us to push back against some of those ableist assumptions and say, you know what, it's actually really valuable. Maybe someone has social anxiety that if we were recording in person and we, you know, made them come to the gallery and we had mics and all these things set up, they might not have been as comfortable to share as, you know, compared to if they're in their own home, in their own bed, whatever that might be. So I think that's really powerful to note. And yeah, for me personally, the Crypt Times allowed me to meet and connect with people that I may not have had the opportunity to otherwise, whether because of geography, like I don't live in Toronto, I live in Guelph, right? So, and I don't drive. So, but because of geography, because of time, social opportunities, social anxiety, I may not have approached some of these incredible people if I didn't have like an introduction in a room necessarily. But I love sending scary emails. I love, you know, there's nothing to lose like by an email request. So I've gained a lot of confidence, I think, in saying, hey, we think you're really cool. Do you want to come on our show? And I think like everybody who we approached said yes, which was such a, like such an honor. But it really, yeah, I think it eliminated some of the physical constraints that may have appeared for myself and for other people if we had to produce in person.
Yeah, agreed. I think that us being able to do it over a distance was very helpful for people, for us included. And also, we just got some new skills that now, if and when we do go back to a thing where we're recording in real spaces, we can give people the option of they can do it at home if they prefer. And that's okay. And that's supported and applauded. And I'll just also say it was a huge lifeline over the past over a year and a half now, doing this series for myself.
It really feels like a time capsule, doesn't it? Like, it'd be really funny to listen to some of the episodes just based on what was happening in the world and the status of the pandemic and of social unrest. Like, we often open with those questions, like, how's your quarantine going? And it's a little time capsule.
Yeah, we have a bit of a, we can probably relate a lot of our collective members too, because like a lot of us never met in person. And a lot of us have been able to get involved with radio just because it was online this year. So, yeah. Last but not least, is there anything you would like to say to our CITR listeners? Any final messages? Maybe how can they can get involved? Because we're in BC, you're in Ontario, like all of that.
Kayla's the best at the social media connection. So maybe I'll let her tell you where you can find us, and then maybe you can sign off with a little goodbye.
Yeah, sounds good. I was going to suggest, we could take a page from our own book and everyone could share what brings them joy lately. That could be an option, but no, it's bringing me joy to be here with all of you. And I will say, yes, with my social media comms hat on, please follow Bodies in Translation on Insta, Twitter, Facebook. The website is bodiesintranslation.ca, and Tangled as well on all of your social platforms. You can find us Insta, Facebook, Twitter, and the website is tangledarts.org. We'd love to connect with you there, and yeah, slide into our DMs if you have any questions. I know we threw a lot at you in this hour. And a final message, I don't know, like, I invite you to interrogate where ableism might show up in your everyday life, because once you see it, you can't unsee it, I think. And it really has made me like a better collaborator, friend, partner, all of that, to consider, you know, how hostile the world can be to all of us. And if you create with accessibility in mind, you might like surprise yourself how much better it just feels to be in spaces that are just less hostile. So yeah, that's my invitation to your listeners is just maybe take note of where ableist assumptions show up for you and how you might be able to push back and make things a little more comfy if you have the opportunity.
I love that. I'm going to add to that. Yes, taking the time to integrate access into all the things that you do and taking the time to put comfort into it as well will only make whatever you are creating, doing, thinking about better, because you'll have so many more perspectives with which to work with. And you'll have more people who are able to take part. And as such, you will always end up with a better thing.
And yeah, just lastly, if folks do have questions, concerns, want to get involved, we have our fingers crossed for a second season. It's not confirmed quite yet, but you can reach me at kayla@tangledarts.org. That's my work email. And I would also encourage you to just like follow so many cool disabled creators online. Like, again, once you find a few, you'll find many. And I'm honored to learn from them literally every day. So there you go. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, and I just think Kayla and Yusuf had such beautiful sign-offs. I don't necessarily think I have a ton to add, that just that, like, making work that is inherently accessible or grounded or rooted in access can oftentimes seem like a daunting task and a lot of extra work. And I just invite people to reframe, this idea of access being labor and really looking at it as the labor is being disrupting and dismantling ableism in our society. And I think that's a way that we can be a little bit more generous with our own selves and our own capacity and our own kind of like journeys within this immense undertaking of being, making our world less ableist. And obviously this conversation has been such a gift. And for folks who are listening right now, Crutchins is so excited to be able to be in partnership with CITR. So all 10 of our episodes are going to be on CITR starting August 3rd. So we have the Thursday 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. time slot, and that's in Pacific Standard Time. So that's Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. for all of our Ontario listeners. And I think that something that we spoke about at the very beginning of this conversation was this value in crit and disabled friendships and relationships, and just being able to have this partnership between Crit Times Podcast and CITR has been really generative and been an extension of this lifeline that Crit Times has been for Kayla, Youssef, and myself over the past 2 years now, year and a half now. I don't know what years are. Year and a half.
Like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I mean, of course, listen on CITR, but like I said, fingers crossed for a second season, so you can find us wherever you like to get your pods.
Thank you so much for these last thoughts. They were, as always, very thoughtful, very considered, and super deep. Thank you for that. And that wraps up our show for today. Youssef, Christina, and Kayla, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate all of you coming on our show, and we are pleased to see the Crip Times podcast series bring representation, you know, and diversity to our radio show too. And as Christina mentioned, we are partnering now, we'll hopefully be working together in the near future. So everyone, please look for some updates on this and more on All Access Pass social media channels. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. And just some closing remarks, if you are interested in joining our team here at CITR or think there is an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Special thank you to Youssef, Christina, and Kayla, the team of Crip Times podcast series, for chatting with us.
And please like our All Access Pass Facebook page.
If you're on Twitter, on Instagram, or both, please follow us at access_CITR.
And if you missed part of our live show today and you want to listen again, or maybe you want to listen to our past shows, you can do so on CITR.ca by going to the search box and typing in All Access Pass.
Take care and stay safe. Stick around for more CITR programming coming up next. Bye, everyone.